everybody was in your shoes at one point.
Right.
And so there's no magic bullet. It's just through a system of hard work and relationships that you can succeed.
Welcome to the Passion Behind the Art Show. It's all about diving in with individuals to learn the story behind their passion. It's your host, Daryl Pinnock. I have some big news. Episode 50 is coming. It's going to be an 8 to 9 hour live stream. Yes, it's going to be crazy. Tons of awesome guests. A bunch of giveaways. It's just going to be a big celebration to celebrate this great milestone, 50 episodes into this podcast. So go to dpcreates.com to learn more. You don't want to miss it. dpcreates.com, episode 50, coming to you live. Now, this week's episode. Well, I am excited to have Mr. Ben Burns on the Passion Behind the Art Show. Some of you guys know him from Blind. Some of you guys know him from Future. Ben, welcome.
Thanks, man. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be doing this with you.
Yeah, man. I was pretty stoked that you were down for this. Always surprising, no matter who it is, when people say yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wrote an article about saying yes. Saying yes is amazing. I love that movie with, I think it's Jim Carrey, Yes Man?
Yes.
Changed my life, man. It was the dumbest movie in the world, but I'm going to tell you this. That movie changed my life because then I started saying yes to things, and it was like, hey, do you want to do this? You want to move across the country? Yes. Yes. And I have no idea if I want to do that, but sure, yes, you know?
It's kind of crazy because in the actual movie, it kind of just works out for him in the end. So you may be onto something.
That's right.
Well, Ben, let's kick it off. How did your creative journey start?
Okay. I'm going to take you back to high school. So let me turn off my notifications real quick so we don't get interrupted. Okay, cool. So I'm going to take it back to high school. You know, when I hit high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I had bounced around from middle school to middle school. I think I went to like 11 elementary schools. And that was just, you know, my parents moved a lot and we, you know, we just couldn't figure out where to settle down. Oh. So I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I knew that I could draw a little bit. So I started to explore, you know, the arts. So eventually I found this love for photography. And I'm going to date myself here, but these are the days right when digital cameras maybe were first coming out, but they were too expensive for anybody to buy, right? So like we're talking about the 1 megapixel new Canon that just hit the market. You know what I mean? That was the dream.
Right.
So I was using film and there was something magical about capturing these moments, because the thing that I struggled with the most as an artist, and I don't even call myself an artist, the thing that I struggled with the most was trying to figure out what was inside of me that needed to get out. Because I don't have that voice. I don't have that message that caged lion that a lot of these artists have. They're trying to they have to express themselves for some reason. I don't know. I don't get it. And so with photography, I felt like I could capture things, capture moments, and communicate these moments to other people. And there was just something magical about taking a roll of film into the dark room and seeing that image kind of emerge out of the paper. So that was, I would say that was my real, initial look at, the creative world.
Awesome. 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 So you started in high school, got this creative itch. So that means you went from high school, jumped into college, started becoming, learning to become a designer, graduated, and then started working for a design firm.
Yeah, kind of. So I had big dreams of becoming a professional photographer at this like studio in New York, and somewhere along the lines, somebody told me, I don't know who it was. I really want to figure this out because I want to go slap them. But somebody told me along the lines that you wouldn't be able to make money with photography.
Mm.
So So this is before social media. This is before, you know, you had to have creds to be a photo, to be a photographer.
True.
And, you know, so I believed them. And so I wound up at Clemson, bounced around the program there, then went to University of South Carolina, you know, bounced around marketing and advertising, and nothing was a good fit. And one thing that, you know, my high school did not prepare me for was I didn't know design was a profession at all until my junior year in college.
That's just crazy, man. There's so much people that said that, even me myself.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, you know, I was in college in these advertising classes, and they wanted us to come up with ideas for, I don't know, Coke or something, you know, stupid student project, something like that. And I kept watching these people go up, and they would present these horrible like Microsoft Word ads. And I'm like, dude, this is totally, look at me. I know Photoshop, and I'd throw something stupid up too. And I felt like I was the top dog because I had something like laid out. Really, I almost failed that class because it was all about the concept and the copywriting and the actual layout. But somehow I stumbled across an internship like job listing for this company called Post No Bills.
Okay.
And they said that, you know, they were looking for a design intern, and, you know, you had to know Photoshop and Illustrator. I was like, oh, Photoshop, I know. Illustrator, I'll just, you know, I'll put that down too, because that's got to be the same, right? So I went in there, and I went into this creative studio in a full suit and tie, and sat down across from a creative director that graduated Ringling and, you know, was this 60s hippie that, you know, loved her to death. But she looked at me like I was the marketing devil with, you know, buttoned up suit and tie and everything like that. So the funny thing is she goes, okay, let's take a look at your portfolio.
Oh.
And I said, you know, I don't know what that is. I don't have one.
Oh my
and this
gosh.
Is like, I walked in and it was like, you know, DreamWorks and Paramount Pictures, these clients that they had were massive, right. Massive clients. And it was just probably one of the most embarrassing moments of my life.
Yikes.
Was just sitting there and saying, I don't have one. Somehow she saw something in me that triggered her, you know, next response. And she was like, I'm going to let you try again. Be back here in 24 hours with some examples of your work. So I was like, okay. I stayed up all night putting this thing together. And it's horrible. My first portfolio is horrible. It's full of papyrus and stupid labels. And I made up all these different projects. I like went online and did every tutorial that I could find with my pirated copy of Adobe Creative Suite or, you know, Photoshop One.
Right. Man, you're bringing it back, bro.
Yeah. So I brought in all these comps and she was like, okay, all right. So tell, you know, explain this. And I said, this is what I did. And, you know, since I left, I went from the interview home. I stayed up all night. I want this job. I want to learn from you. And that's how I got the job. That was my first internship.
So, okay. So you started this internship. How did you get to where you are right now? Did you just jump from the internship to just boom, Mr. Ben Burns?
No. You know, Casey Neistat has this awesome way of putting things where he talks about the journey from where you are to where you want to be. When you look backwards or when you're out on the outside of looking in, it looks like this straight line. You know, the decisions are made in a sequential basis. But he kind of he says it's more like swinging through the jungle on vines. Right? You kind of like go over here and then you swing back over here and then you swing this one and that one, you know, winds you way far back than you ever thought you would, you know, go.
Right.
Then finally you get where you're going. And that's kind of how it was with me.
Okay.
So I interned there for free for, you know, I think a year or 6 months or something like that. And then I got hired full time as a junior designer. I worked there for a year or two and finished school at the same time. I was, you know, doing school at night and working during the day. And, you know, when I graduated, it was right before the housing market crashed. So right before the Depression hit, and I started looking around because I wanted to spread my wings a little bit, and I just, like, there were no jobs. This is right when the Depression hit. Everybody pulled the jobs off the market.
Right.
So I was like, you know what? I think I was watching 24 at the time or something, you know.
That will do that.
I was like, I wonder if I'd be a good cop. So I just threw my application in everywhere and wound up with a job offer from Savannah Metro PD. Ooh. So I started down there 2009 as a beat cop. And I spent maybe about 6 months on the street doing, you know, accidents and traffic tickets and all the stupid stuff that people hate.
Right.
And then I went and, you know, joined the military, which is obviously the logical next choice, right?
Right.
So I joined the National Guard about 6 months after I got cut loose on the street as a beat cop. And I spent probably 6 months away at training in the National Guard. And then when I came back, man, I was fit. I was gung-ho. I went back to being a beat cop. But within a couple months, I received two promotions in kind of rapid succession and wound up at a narcotics unit.
Wow.
Yeah. So life at a narcotics unit in comparison to, you know, being a beat cop is so much better, especially, you know, when you come from an artistic background. You know, this beard is several years old. You know, working with drugs is always incredibly interesting.
Right, right.
So, you know, I did that for a few years, and I started freelancing on the side because I was, you know, basically I was married at that point. I had a little bit of extra time, and I was like, let me see if I can just, you know, do that 9-to-1 hustle, right?
Gotcha,
get off
gotcha,
work, gotcha. Come home, do some freelancing. And eventually the freelancing dollars started to make way more sense than the dollars that I was pulling in from the city.
Gotcha.
And, you know, as a police officer. So I started to look at this, and this dream of opening my own shop really kind of like germinated. Mm. And I think it was maybe 6 months later after this realization hit that I just made the jump. I made the leap. I turned in my badge and gun. I quit, and I set up a studio at my house.
So what drew in being a narcotics agent? Like, what were you doing to kind of start planting seeds to be getting these freelance gigs?
Finding clients. I get this question a lot, and I did it the wrong way.
Mm.
I was on, I think it was Odesk at the time. Maybe it's Upwork now or something like that. I was on Freelancer. I signed up for Fiverr. I never did a Fiverr job. Super proud of that, right? I never did a Fiverr job. But I was signed up for Fiverr because I was like, okay, last resort.
Yeah.
I need to make enough money for a cup of coffee. I got to, you know, something. But, you know, that's how I found my first clients. And somehow, you know, when I was first starting out on my own, I had no meter. You know, I had nothing to compare my skills, my rates. I had no idea of the standard that was out there. So I didn't know that my $50 logo that I was charging, that I was like super psyched about, was actually worth upwards of, you know, $5,000-$10,000 to the right client.
Right.
So, you know, I was basically focused on finding more clients. I was already working, you know, 12, 14 hour days with the clients that I did have. And I was super, super focused on finding more clients. And I was trying to figure out ways to maximize Odesk and Upwork and Elance and all these different job aggregator sites and just find people and just to engage with me that I just missed out on the whole networking piece.
So that means you must have been like working your face off.
Oh yeah, man. That period of my life, you know, I was up at 9. I'm more of a night owl.
Right.
I was up at 9 and going to bed 2, 3, 4 in the morning and just working nonstop in between. So that was rough. That was rough. But I think being a cop, being in the military, allowed me to learn that work ethic, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. So now you're out on your own. When did you and how did you transform to Burnt Creative?
So this is a good question, you know, because a lot of people struggle with saying, I'm not a we because it's just me. And that's something that I had to overcome. And Chris Doe, who's the founder of The Future, who is my boss right now, played an instrumental role in helping me get there. Mm. And so the first step in becoming Burnt Creative and becoming a we was just to say we.
Gotcha.
To write it on the website, to say, you know, hey, I have a marketing agency or a design studio or a design firm, you know, depending on the day. And to really start visualizing myself as a business instead of a freelancer.
Gotcha. So at this time, you knew Chris at this time.
Okay, so I started watching, I think it was Today in Web Design with Jose back in like 2012.
Right, I remember that. Right?
So I watched Jose for months before he kind of joined forces with Chris and the school was formed.
Right.
So 2013, I really dug into the products and I think I wound up buying Core. And then in early 2014, I believe, I reached out to Chris. And this is, you know, this is just me. At this point, I'm in Richmond, Virginia. We moved somewhere in there. And I'm in my loft and I'm just like, wow, the content that you guys are putting out is just incredible. It was educational. It was like, it gave me the meter that I needed to say, hey, I'm a little bit more valuable than this, if that makes sense.
Okay, gotcha.
So I reached out to Chris and I just said, thank you. Mm. And that was it. It was like this long note, you know, it was just fraught with, I read it back a couple days ago and it was like, wow, I sound pathetic. Like, oh my God, I take pity on myself back in those days, right? Because it was just like, God, thank you. Thank you, Chris. So I wrote him this thank you note, and I, you know, I was starstruck, right, by this duo, and Chris wrote me back. Mm. And I was like, just getting that message back from him, I was like, holy smokes, this guy took the time to write me back. Like, this is an Emmy Award-winning designer. I cracked open the message, and he was like, in true Chris Doe fashion, it was all lowercase, and he said, awesome, thanks. Want to chat tomorrow? And I was like, what? I couldn't believe it, right?
Insane.
I was like, absolutely, I want to chat tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my wife just could not calm me down that whole night. I was just awake, just eyes wide open. And you got to think, like, you know, at this point, I had 52 or 54 clients, something like crazy astronomical like that. And every single client had at least one job. Some of them had multiple jobs. So I was just working myself to the bone, trying to, you know, make ends meet.
Right.
And so I jump on the phone with Chris the next day. And, you know, the first piece of advice that he gave me was, you know, I want to help you, but I can't because you have no time to create things. You have no time to work on your business. And he was like, you have to fire your clients.
Yikes.
I said, wait. Hold on. What did you say? I was like, you know, what? Let's rewind. You said you want me to fire all my clients. And he said, yeah, fire all your clients. And, you know, you want to tell them, look, you know, as we grow, I obviously have to increase my prices. And so he said, you need to write a script. Stick to the script and read it to them and just tell them that unless they can pay you more, you're ending the relationship.
Oh.
And so I did. And so what happened was all 52 of them threw a fit, but two of them stayed.
Wow.
And those two clients that stayed wound up giving me more money per month than all 52 of the clients combined. Because these people were, you know, they saw the value of my input and services and stuff like that. So it worked out to my benefit immediately. That was like the first piece of advice he gave. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you remember, quick question, if you remember, like, your rate before you talked to Chris,
mm-hmm.
and after you talked to Chris, like, how much did you times it? Like,
okay.
did you, like, 10x it? Did you?
No, it's way more than that. I was charging per deliverable. So, you know, $50 logo, right? That would be a good middle ground for me, average. If it was a $100 logo, I was like super pumped,
right?
And that would include, you know, a couple of pages of a style guide and, you know, three revisions along the way. And like, you know, just I wound up working for like $2-3 an hour, right? So after Chris, those clients that stayed on, they agreed to pay me $100 an hour.
Wow.
So just, you know, we had retainers for, I think it was like 10 or 20 hours a month. And that was all I needed. So my workload went way down. The, you know, my time went way up. And what was crazy is right around the same time, my wife got pregnant, our first kid. So it was like all these things happening all at once, and it was terrifying and wonderful and amazing, and it was just a wild adventure right there in the beginning.
Okay, so now, all right, Burnt Creative is doing a lot better. You've made this drastic change. What caused you to close the doors for Burnt Creative and join on to Blind?
That is an awesome question. So at that point, when, you know, when I first started my relationship with Chris, it was me alone, solo, in my loft. And his second piece of advice to me was that you need to get somebody to work for you. And so I immediately hired an intern.
Gotcha.
From there, it was just like rapid succession of, you know, learning how to network. I became the vice president of AIGA in Richmond. It was just like, you know, because I had the time to work on the business grew.
Gotcha.
And so finally, in, I believe, the beginning of 2016, we had a team of 5 in office, and then I think 10 to 12 remote people that we used, you know, time to time.
Gotcha.
Copywriters, developers, things of that nature.
Right.
So we grew to kind of a respectable studio. We had an office in downtown Richmond. And it was right around that time where, you know, Chris and I, that relationship, that mentorship, stayed in place for those 2-3 years. And what started as me picking up the phone and pacing in the hallway and, you know, just like writing every single word he said down, turned into, you know, Chris saying, oh man, you have a lot of this digital expertise. Because as part of my, you know, that grind working for that many clients, I would do anything for them. So they wanted websites done. I taught myself HTML, CSS. I learned WordPress. I learned how to build custom themes, you know, and I would do that. Whatever they wanted. So I built this immense knowledge of the digital space.
Gotcha.
And so we started talking about, you know, the school, which subsequently turned into the future. And I forget how the conversation like came up. It was something effective, like me being all sweaty and nervous and saying, hey, Chris, I kind of want to work with you.
Oh.
And Chris fashion was like, okay, let's talk about it. You know, like, let's do this. And so that conversation, you know, I didn't know how that relationship was going to come about. And eventually, you know, I flew out for a workshop. I saw the space. I got to meet him in person. At this point, we were talking on a weekly basis.
Gotcha.
And yeah, the rest is really history. He offered me a job out here, and packed up and moved. That's it. We actually brought one of my employees with me, really? Mark Cassie. Yeah. And he spent almost a year out here. No, a little less than a year. And wanted to head home to see family. But it was a wild adventure there.
So when you hired your first employee, which is you got an intern, was that like a paid internship or free internship at the time?
The first guy was paid.
Gotcha.
The first guy was paid because he was out of school and it didn't fall under a school program. So I don't like for anybody to work for me for free.
Gotcha.
I've been in those shoes. I don't like to see that. Unless I can offer them something that they're not going to get anywhere else. So, you know, I had a couple of students do unpaid internships or apprenticeships in the past. I think the first guy was paid. Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. So let's jump into, let's pause on being at Blind and the future. I remember you posted something and you were talking about just getting with prospects and meeting mm-hmm. them for just a meal or taking them out to lunch. Kind of talk a little bit about that. Break that down a little bit. Because I was just curious about how do you even initiate that?
So every success in business that I've had has been due to a real relationship. And so, you know, you have to, when you're reaching out and cold calling people and cold emailing them, and, you know, it is very cold. And one of the ways that I was able to break the ice, and just, I think it's just because I'm a big old teddy bear, is just to say, hey, man, let's go grab coffee. Let's go grab lunch. Now, Chris would say, don't do that because it's a horrible way to do business because, you know, if you don't like each other, now you're sitting across from each other at the meal. For me, it really worked. And honestly, what I did was I tried to put myself into as many positions as I could to meet the right people.
Gotcha.
So it wasn't necessarily me like spamming everybody on LinkedIn or buying a list or doing anything kind of like shady like that. It was more of like, okay, being the vice president of the AIGA group in Richmond is a strategic decision to put myself in the place where I'm going to be exposed to other designers and people who hire designers and all that kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
And that's how I met another mentor who introduced me to another guy who I took out to lunch. And then we had this kind of like bromance thing for a little bit. Then he referred me to a job. But it's all relationships. So how you do it, it doesn't matter, but you have to meet as many people as you can and establish these like authentic back and forth relationships with them in order to, for them to think about you when they need something. Right.
Right.
Cause like people don't walk around like, oh, I need a designer until they actually need a logo done, you know?
Right.
And so it's better to make a relationship, with that person 4 months before. And then they realize that they need something, and bam, you're the guy that they think of.
Okay, cool. Which makes sense, because most of the people that's ever hired me to design is people that I either know or I know them a while, and they'll just reach out, hey, Daryl, I need a, and this is probably years after.
Right.
I mean, so.
And it works the same way at this scale, too. You know, a lot of our jobs are from the network that we've built around Blind. You know, I do a lot of the new business or initial conversations when it comes to Blind clients now. And I'm surprised how many people know Chris or know of Blind or know somebody that worked with Blind, you know, and it's just because Blind's been around for 22 years, you know? Mm-hmm. So
right.
Those relationships are just, they're incredibly valuable. And I think people don't give their current network the credit that it deserves either. Because I can guarantee you that somebody that you know on Facebook knows somebody that needs something done.
That's,
you know what I mean?
That's true. So how do you, because the balance is like, how to even tap into that?
I think it's just, you know, it's kind of like asking, how do you take advantage of your friends? Right.
Right. Right. That's how you, and that's the struggle sometimes.
And so, like, if you think of your best friend, if you need something, what do you do?
Ask. Right.
And that's it. Right. So what would stop you from tomorrow or you know, tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., finding 15 people out of your Facebook friends list who might be connected to somebody and calling them and asking them, say, hey, man, you know, listen, I know you've been following me on Facebook. I've been doing this design thing for a long time. I'd love to meet somebody if you know anybody who needs services like mine. That's it.
Yeah. And see, and that's what I like probably the most about you guys, because usually if it's on the future or I'm watching any of your guys' video, you kind of just give something that's actionable. What you just said is literally something that someone could go do after they finish listening right now.
Thanks, man.
And that to me makes sense. And I mean, it's love. It's great to get these motivational things, but when you could get something actionable that moment that makes sense,
yeah,
that I can go do, it's a lot of times it's life changing.
All right, I'm gonna give you guys, I'm gonna give your audience one more thing to kind of hold on to, right? It's really, really hard finding clients in a cold manner. Like, that's a universal truth. It's really, really tough. Mm-hmm. So one strategy is to find other service providers that do fringe things around your service. Mm. So for designers, networking with photographers or developers or people who have access to maybe some clients that, you know, need design as well. It drives me crazy when I see hand letterers in Facebook and they're like, I don't know where to find clients. It's like, go to wedding photographers. They are, you know, so find people that, you know, sell those fringe services around what you sell and say, hey, look, you know, I'd love to partner up on a project every once in a while. And, you know, I'd be happy to put you in my network when I need photographers and you need designers. And it's a mutually beneficial kind of thing.
It's crazy you said that, because a friend of mine, he's a photographer, and I literally told him to kind of network with banquet halls.
Bam. Right there.
So it literally makes sense. It literally makes sense. So we're at Blind now. The future has started. Talk a little bit about that and what's your role in it. And I know you guys are doing like, you guys are like on hyperdrive since last year.
Yeah, yeah.
So talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so I started a year ago yesterday at Blind in the Future. My brother and I had this epic cross-country road trip that I vlogged the whole time and never released the footage. But we made it over here to California and started here. And I have 2.5 jobs, right? Mm-hmm. So I am the digital director of Blind. So anything UX, UI related, I lead those projects on kind of like a creative director level. I also do a lot of like the brand strategy, because that's what I did for Burnt Creative, and that's what kind of my background and passion is. Then on the future side, I'm also kind of in charge of like everything that makes money, if that makes sense. So okay. When it comes to a lot of our paid courses, like the typography course that we just launched, when it comes to promo items like hats, shirts, you know, whatever we sell on our website, that kind of falls under my domain. So, you know, I'm working on advertising, working on, you know, keeping our e-commerce site limping along, you know, like all that kind of stuff. And then the other half job that I have is a content creator. And that's what I really, really love doing and working with Chris on when I can, is developing content for YouTube and stuff like that. So, and we've seen a pretty dramatic growth in the past year, like you mentioned. When I started, we had like 52,000 subscribers on YouTube. And that took about 4 years to get. So now I think we're sitting at like 211,000 subscribers. So this year has been pretty dramatic. in our growth. You know, we're starting to see the beginning of that hockey stick. Okay. And the same thing has happened with our revenue. You know, we're growing over 300% year over year. And so I'm just like immensely grateful to be kind of like a part of whatever's happening here. The amazing things.
Is just a quick question in regards to that growth, especially with the subscribers and stuff. Is it because of more live events is causing that?
I think live was huge last year. I think, you know, it was kind of new for Facebook. It was definitely new for YouTube. And they were really throwing a lot of traffic against that. This is my personal opinion. I don't know any of these things. I'm not behind closed doors in any of these companies. But to me, it really felt like the live streams were, you got extra credit from the platforms for doing them.
Especially Facebook. I do believe that for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So taking advantage of that was I would say it's a huge, it contributed to our success in a pretty big way. What it did that I did not expect is that it made every single one of us better on camera. So I still suck at it, right? I am not an actor. I still suck at being on camera. But even just talking with you, it was very hard for me to put a couple sentences together. And I have a personal channel on YouTube, and you can see that in the vlogs, the very first vlogs that I put up there. I am so awkward. And so through this year, being in front of a live audience all the time, that was immensely powerful for personal growth for every single person in the office. You know, you saw Molly and Aaron just drastically improved, being held accountable by eyeballs for them, made them better craftsmen, made them better, you know, at their craft.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get back to, Ben personally a little. Like, what would you say was the hardest struggle that you had to overcome through this journey?
You know, I thought about the this question a lot, and I think it's just wanting to do it all, right? I want to do everything, and I struggle with that on a daily basis. There's only 24 hours in the day, right? And I still work until 1, 2, 2:30 in the morning, because there's not enough hours in the workday to get everything that I want to do done. Wow. I love living. Gary Vaynerchuk says, he has this thing about clouds and dirt, right? You have to live in the clouds and help the organization grow and think big picture, but you also have to be a practitioner. And so that's the struggle. That's the balance that I'm trying to seek. And for me, it's just, I just want to do everything and try everything. I want to learn about storytelling and design and, you know, growing businesses and advertising and marketing. And it's just, sometimes it can be overwhelming. So that's the challenge that I really find.
So how do you even like, how are you fixing that? Or how are you working on that? Like, what are you doing? Like any tactical stuff specifically? Or...
So I have this thing about resolutions, right? Nobody sticks to them. And by February, you really forget about them. And I think it's because a lot of the resolutions that we put out there are result-oriented.
Right.
And so, like, you know, I'd like to lose pounds this year. I lost 60 pounds last year, and I'd like to lose the last 50 this year. But putting that goal on myself, there's kind of an element of things that you can't really control, right? You can control how much you put in your mouth. You can control how much you exercise. But you can't really sit there and dial your weight down.
Right.
That's a result, right? And it's the same thing with subscriber count and sales and marketing and you know, any kind of like metric that you put on yourself for resolution. So this year, instead of saying I will focus or, you know, try and set an unrealistic goal, I would like to go to bed by 1 o'clock, 200 days.
Okay.
So far, 2. So in answer to your question, I am not balancing it well, and that's okay, because I thrive in this. You know, There was one point in early days of freelancing where I was freelancing. I was running maybe four or five jobs, and I was also remodeling a house and working as a police officer. So I love being busy. I love staying active, and I just want to do it all.
All right, so let's get to some of the top people in Ben's life, the people that you kind of build your support system around, people you draw that energy from. Who would you say some of those top people are?
She's going to hold this over my head, but my wife is amazing. Mm-hmm. I could not be here without her. When you look at marriage or a partnership of any kind, the best and strongest partnerships have this kind of like yin and yang thing, right?
Yeah.
And so I know that when I'm off on my yin or yang or whatever, she's got the home front taken care of, right? So she doesn't, she's a stay-at-home mom. And I have just the utmost confidence that she's going to make things happen and take care of the house. And having that confidence and having that like stable foundation just allows me to just explode and do what I need to do.
Gotcha.
That's number one. Chris is number two. He's been instrumental in changing my life. That guy is incredible. And then number three is that first creative director. I don't think I would have a career in design if she hadn't seen that spark in me. And I wasn't in design. I didn't graduate from a design school.
Right.
I graduated out of a media arts program, which was kind of like the garbage bin that University of South Carolina threw all the programs in that, you know, didn't fit in anywhere. It was like, I had 3D modeling. I had like all this kind of crap that, you know,
right.
It's just this basket of art. so she, Carol Smith is her name. And she really taught me everything I know about design, using the programs, using the tools, process. Like, she really ingrained that in me, in my time, working for.
Awesome. And you still keep in touch with her till today?
Yeah.
Cool. But I can read the part that your wife play, I resonate with that because my wife is a stay-at-home mom too. And sometimes she kind of gets discouraged because she's not really bringing income. And I'm like, the time you give me, like, is immense. When I can go off and do podcasts or go off to a conference or go off and do this, like, yeah. You have everything under control and I don't have to worry about my kids running at me or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I like to say that you only have so much RAM, right, in your head.
Exactly.
There's only so much operating memory. And when you use up all that bandwidth on things like making sure the family bank account is budgeted or making sure the daughter gets fed or, you know, like all this kind of stuff that at least takes care of for me. I don't think that I'll be able to focus as well as I do at work.
That's facts, sure. Man. That's facts. So as we get closer to the end, what mm-hmm. advice would you give creatives?
I'm going to say this, you know, nobody knows anything, right? Everybody was in your shoes at one point.
Right.
And so there's no magic bullet. It's just through a system of hard work and relationships that you can succeed.
Oh.
So, I coming out here and joining the team at Blind was super intimidating for me. And working alongside some of the best creatives that I have ever seen, they go through the same struggles that I went through when I was freelancing, right?
Right.
You know, clients, revision cycles, and just all the same crap that you deal with on a day-to-day basis. It's just at a different scale when it comes to the brand level and the money.
Oh.
So just rest assured that nobody has the magic bullet answer. It's just tough. And the best way to succeed is just to be okay with having it tough, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Dude, thank you so much for just dropping knowledge. Thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. We got to do this again.
Yeah, man. I'm already thinking about it. If you're down for it, we're going to make this happen again. For now, thanks again, Ben.
Absolutely. So if you guys want to find me,
right.
I am everywhere under Mr. Ben Burns. Happy to answer questions. And then definitely hit the future up. We would love to see you on the channel.
Awesome. Well, dude, for now, thanks again. For sure, we'll keep in touch. But blessings, man.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
I want to say thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you want to get in touch with me, you can reach me at DP Creates on Instagram or Twitter. And please leave me a review on iTunes because that helps the podcast to grow. Thanks again. Be blessed.